Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 through the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee Titans minicamp, mandatory minicamp day one in the books. They will have two more practices, and then after that, it is on to the off season. There will be the break, and then it is training camp. You know, it's pretty incredible. This will happen faster than you think, especially faster than you and I think. You know, especially considering that we haven't really gotten into the nitty-gritty about the Predators having the fifth overall pick and how they probably need to nail this pick in order to save their franchise. So that will probably carry us for a nice little while until we get training camp going. But that having been said, I was there. I watched Cam Ward. He looked fine. As I said, he's got a lightning quick release. Ward made a terrible decision on a ball he tried to throw into triple coverage that Cody Barton intercepted. Ward made a beautiful throw. I mean beautiful. Over the middle to Gunnar Helm, where he just put the ball right above the defender. The defender was an inside backer, Curtis Joseph, put it right above his head and right into the hands of Gunnar Helm. He also had a completion of Gunnar Helm that was behind Gunnar Helm. You know, again, I watched him. He threw a bunch of balls to Restrepo. You know, there were some checkdowns, whatever. You know, Will Levis had a day where he makes a beautiful throw down the sideline to Elik Io Manor. He makes a beautiful throw to Chigakonkwo, and then he, you know, overthrows a checkdown. He takes a snap that's a bad snap, and he falls down on the ground and he trips. So it was better than Levis's day, but it wasn't, you know, one way or another. It was fine. So then I get on Twitter. Again, I was there, and look, I know there are people out there that think I'm some big hater, and that when it comes to Ward, like, oh, I don't want Ward to succeed. I'm a diehard Titan fan. I want Cam Ward to be Mahomes. I want Cam Ward to be Mahomes probably more than some of you want Cam Ward to be Mahomes. But I say this because when it comes to how Cam Ward looked today, again, he was fine. I know dazzling when I see it. I know dominant when I see it. I know really, really good when I see it. I mean, I saw Will Levis have a day at practice where he just lit up the third stringers his rookie year. I mean, he was confident. The ball was coming out quick. He was zinging it. He was. And I said, I want to see him get bumped up to the second team. And then I want to see him get bumped up and take some reps with the first team. Now, you got to be careful there with Tannehill because you have to massage it a little bit or Tannehill's going to get mad, and I get that. But I know good. I've seen good. I know bad. I've seen bad. Cam Ward was not bad today. So then I see on Twitter, Titan fans are just giddy about Cam Ward's performance. And I thought, how is Titans Twitter all fired up about Cam Ward? Again, how are they giddy? Jim Wyatt, you know I love Jim. Observations from Titans minicamp. Cam Ward ended practice with 18 straight completions. After an early interception and 7-on-7, Ward went 14 of 14 in the three-team periods. So I clicked it. And it started off with, here's a look at some of the observations from today's session. Again, I was there. I saw Cam Ward. He looked fine. Jim writes, Cam Ward, oh my. On the first day of the team's minicamp, the Titans rookie quarterback was intercepted for the first time this offseason by linebacker Cody Barton on a throw across the middle. It came during an early 7-on-7 period on Ward's third pass of the day. So what did Ward do? He completed his next 18 passes in practice, including 6 of 7 in 7-on-7 and a perfect 14 of 14 in the team periods, making him 20 of 21 for the day. It was Ward's best practice of the offseason. And I'm not saying Jim said anything in this that is factually incorrect, and I'm not knocking Jim again. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think in my head of anything that he did that was bad. I mean, I can't think of a terrible throw other than the interception. I can't think of any. I mean, again, it was fine. But Titans fans have taken that, something that they did not see, and they have turned this into, oh my God, Cam Ward, he lit it up today. And I'm just here to tell you, That's not what it looked like in person. He looked fine. You know, there was one game Mariota played years ago. I don't know if you guys remember this. This was Vrabel's first season. It was on the road. It was a Monday night football game at Houston. And the Titans got their asses kicked in that game. And if I remember correctly, I think Lamar Miller took a ball up the middle and ran for like 98 yards. The Titans went for it on fourth and short and handed it off to Luke Stocker, because God forbid they hand the ball to Derrick Henry there. He was on the bench for Deion Lewis at that point in time. They went to Houston. They got beat 34-17. And Mariota was 22 of 23 for two touchdowns, no picks. And I remember after the game, all the talk was, Mariota had one incompletion. And I was like, yeah, okay. Again, that's kind of how I felt about Cam Ward's day. And if I was just out here to brag on Cam Ward and to just hate on him because I wanted to trade with the Giants, which again was a trade that I heard wasn't as goosed up as Adam Schefter made it sound, that the Giants' offer was not as generous as Adam. And I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm just saying I heard a rumor that that's not the case. But just because I wanted the Giants' trade doesn't mean I want Cam to fail. But I'm telling you, Cam's performance today was not anything to drop your pants over. And yet, people who weren't there will see 20 of 21 and will see 14 of 14 in team period and say, I mean, that's so good. He threw a lot of balls over the middle to Restrepo. He threw some checkdowns. He threw a bubble screen that lost a couple of yards. Again, he didn't make a throw outside the numbers that seemed like a legitimate NFL throw. He had one throw today, and it was a dandy. I mean, it was a dart to Gunnar Helm. I mean, it was a big boy throw. It was a, you know, it was a Drew Brees type accuracy threading the needle. But again, to act like Cam Ward was so good, I did not see that. And I'm not going to pretend like I saw that. And so I would just say that, again, he was fine. And if you want to take what Jim Wyatt wrote and you want to get all excited about it, be my guest. But it was not. I've seen guys who have been dealing in practice. He wasn't dealing in practice. He was fine. Which, again, for a rookie, that's good. Fine is good. This isn't Will Levis where they have to talk away the fact that he threw the ball into the lake. And they have to make up excuses about it. And Brian Callahan doesn't have to get up there and talk about how good Denard's defense is as to why the offense didn't do anything. The offense moved the ball okay. But let's not get carried away with this statistical analysis and say, like, oh, my God, he's so good. Somebody on Twitter said that PK said that Ward was solid. And you're saying he's fine. Is solid fine? Yeah, I'd say they're synonymous. I'd say, you know, that he was fine. He was solid. Good. Fine. Again, there's a difference between that and, oh, my God, Cam Ward was 20 and 21, and he was incredible, and he was a... And for the people that weren't there, I'm telling you that's the way they're going to take it. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. PK will be on the morning show tomorrow. I doubt he's going to lose his pants over this. TD will be on the show Thursday. We'll see how Ward does on Wednesday, but I highly doubt TD's going to sit there and lose his pants over the performance Ward had today. And Ward's got a lightning-fast release, which is nice to see, but let's not get carried away. And I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Brian Callahan had a comment about Levis today that kind of piqued my interest a little bit. And then you'll never guess what Will Levis did. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 615-737-1025. It's 1025, 106 for the game.
They made the most of those opportunities. I think all of them have. It's been a good spring, I think, for the quarterbacks in general. That part I feel good about. I'm confident with where they're at. You know, Cam's still taking probably more of the reps because he's got more development to go. He's got more things he's got to get exposed to as a young player. But they're all getting opportunities, and I think the takeaway is that they've all made the most of those chances they've had, and it's been a good process this spring.
Oh, Okay, that was Brian Callahan today. And I don't know if you heard the first part of that. I did not hear the first part of that. But the first part of that was he really highlighted Will Levis and said it's not lip service. Will Levis has done a good job. And today at minicamp, when it came to the reps, the first team offensive line reps in team period went to Will Levis. Now, of course, Cam Ward got the most, which Brian Callahan said in there, Cam's going to get the most reps because Cam has the most to do. But I did take note of the fact that it was Will Levis who got the first team reps. The way I deduce what is a first team rep versus a second team rep is which offensive line is in there. There was one throw today where Calvin Ridley was going up against guys I have never heard of. You know, one of the inside backers was a guy named Benda, and it's spelled G-B-E-N-D-A or what. I have no idea who that is. And so Ridley was out there, and there were guys on the offensive line I've never heard of that it's like, okay, what's Ridley out there playing with the eighth team? But there was one of those. So the way that I determine what is a first-team rep as opposed to a second-team rep is which offensive line are you playing behind? Because if the offensive line has Dan Moore Jr. at left tackle, Peter Skoronski at left guard, Corey Levin at center because Lloyd Cushenberry's hurt, Blake Hance at right guard because Kevin Zeitler's too old apparently to practice, and J.C. Latham at right tackle, that is the first team. And that will be the first team this year, granted with Cushenberry and Zeitler expected to be in the mix. The first team rep went to Levis. Now, after a couple of reps, Ward went in there, again, behind the first-team offensive line. When I went to OTAs a couple of weeks ago, it was Brandon Allen who was getting the first-team rep. And then Levis made a throw to Chigakonkwo and made a throw on the outside to Elikayo Manor, and I was like, hey, maybe there's something there with Levis. And then Levis did Levis-like things. He threw a ball over the head of Tajay Spears. I don't remember if it was Spears or Chestnut, but he threw the ball, you know, 3 feet over the guy's head when he was throwing the check down to the back in 7-on-7 with nobody covering him. I mean, just a blatant miss. There was a ball on the outside that Levis tried to throw for Van Jefferson. I actually really like Van Jefferson. You know, Van Jefferson is big, and he looks fast, and there was a ball on the outside that Levis threw off by like 5 or 6 yards. So again, that's our Will. You know, he makes a good throw and then he makes a terrible throw and then he makes a good throw and he makes a terrible throw. And that was him. But Callahan today saying it's not lip service to talk about the improvement with Levis and giving Levis the first team offensive first reps behind, again, the first team offensive line. Now, I don't care about Levis. I mean, I understand Levis is a popular figure. You know, we were talking about this today when it comes to outside of Cam Ward, who is kind of the face of the Titans. If you were to ask other people, and they will tell you that it is Levis, which again, I think is a little crazy. You know, that's what Gentry said to me. I said, Levis is more infamous than he is famous, you know, to be completely frank. But the reason I bring this up is because if Cam doesn't dazzle out the gates, and Levis does do well in the preseason, that'll become a big talking point. That said, I saw enough bad from Levis today, enough of the old Levis today, to make me think that there's really not going to be a competition between him and Cam because Cam is so much better. If you remember Zach Mettenberger, and Zach Mettenberger, I feel like it's a very good comp for Will Levis. Zach Mettenberger said, you know, I'll make Mariota take that. I'm going to fight him to the death or something stupid, you know, like Zach Mettenberger would do. And it was obvious as soon as they got out there for training camp, there was no competition. Mariota was better. It kind of feels to me that's what's going to happen with Cam. But again, the first team reps did go to Will Levis. The one big throw outside the numbers that was completed, Levis to Elikayo Manor, in which Jarvis Brownlee held Io Manor, and he still broke free and caught the ball. Does get me a little worried about Brownlee. The corner position, holy crap. You know, L'Jarius Sneed wasn't out there, and then all of a sudden they got Marcus Harris, the sixth-round rookie. He's out there starting. Phone lines driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. One texter says, and this is fair. Again, with me saying, don't get too carried away because Jim Wyatt said Cam Ward was, what was it, 20 of 21 today? Because Cam was fine today. Was Cam dealing like, oh, my God, he would? No. But he said, we as fans can only consume clips and the words that journalists promote. What do you want us to do? And I would say, you know, there is something to that. If all the people say is, hey, Cam was 20 of 21, as a Titan fan, you can't be there at minicamp today. What are you supposed to think? And that's a fair point. I guess that's why I'm pushing back, saying, like, hey, he was fine today, but let's not lose our panties over it because he wasn't that good. One texter says, the reports are after throwing a pick, he went 18 for 18. I'm fine with him not dazzling right now with his throws. I'm really looking for mistakes and how he responds. And if the report is true, that's exactly what I want from a rookie quarterback. I mean, it was fine. Again, I'm not going to get too caught up one way or another, but so on and so forth. Let's go to Michael, who's up next here on the program. Michael, thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, I mean, I think Will Levis needs to be the starting quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. Let Cam Ward sit right now. And we just signed a veteran running back as well to mentor these young pups as well, like Rex Burkhead, you know. Good running back, Super Bowl winning running back. He could give him a lot of advice. And I think they need to bring in a couple more veterans.
Time out. Where did Rex Burkhead come from? Wait a minute. I must have missed that. What?
He's a Super Bowl winning running back. He could teach these pups a little something.
I mean, okay, so you want to bring Rex Burkhead in to run the football for the Tennessee Titans?
Yes, sir.
Is Rex Burkhead even an active player?
I know he's a free agent right now. I just checked on ESPN.
Rex Burkhead is 35 years old and has not played since 2022 when he carried the ball 26 times for 80 yards.
Hey, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl at 40. What are you saying about that?
I'm saying that Rex Burkhead is not Tom Brady. Tom Brady also last played in 2022. You want Tom Brady to play quarterback right now for the Titans?
Yes, sir.
Well, in fairness, I wouldn't totally be against that either. But I am telling you, like, the Titans are not an old pawpaw running back away from being any good. I don't even know what made you think of that. In all seriousness, what made you think of Rex Burkhead? Okay, he dropped. That was one of the more off-the-wall kind of calls. I will say this when it comes to Tajay Spears. There was a question that was asked when it came to Tajay Spears. And, you know, Callahan talked about, yeah, Tajay didn't have the year he wanted to. And it was a long, drawn-out thing about Spears this and Spears that. And I'm just like, can we just get over Tajay Spears? Tajay Spears, people like the idea of Tajay Spears more than they actually like what Tajay Spears is. The idea of Tajay Spears is that he's some sort of dynamic back with the ball in his hands who can run it and catch it and be elusive. And you'd like, again, the upside here is like he could be Alvin Kamara. He could be Marshall Faulk. He's not. He's a third down running back. He's Kevin Faulk, not Marshall Faulk, Kevin Faulk, who I'm sure that last caller probably wants the Titans to sign to because he won Super Bowls with Tom Brady in New England a long time ago too. Tajay Spears was a bad draft choice. You do not use top 100 picks for third down running backs. You sign third down running backs for a veteran minimum salary the way that you did with Jeremy McNichols and Dontrell Hilliard. But no, the Titans are not an old pawpaw veteran running back away from competing. Rex Burkhead. Again, hasn't taken a carry since 2022, in which he had 26 carries for 80 yards. Give me a break. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Trevor joins us next. So we are going to play the Jeffrey Simmons cut from today. Jeffrey Simmons explained where he was when deciding not to be at OTAs, We'll play it. We'll talk about it with Trevor, and we'll do it next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 through the game. Stillman and Company, a Titans OTA's over. It's now the mandatory mini camp, which meant for the first time this year, Jeffrey Simmons actually had to be out there on the field. And so Jeffrey Simmons, again, Brian Callahan was saying, hey, this is, you know, this offseason is going to be what separates us, accountability, teamwork, leadership, development, everything. And Simmons said, no, thank you, not interested, don't need to go. Simmons was asked about his absence today. Here's what Jeffrey Simmons had to say.
Great to be back out here on the field with the guys, getting to work with the guys. You know, it's not always an easy decision, making it that decision not to be here with your teammates, especially with a lot of new guys. First pick of the draft, not being here, but, you know, I made that decision. It's a personal decision. Today was a good day. I was glad to be back. You know, like I said, that was my decision. It was a personal decision, and that's pretty much what it was. And like I said, it felt great to be back out here today.
What led into that decision to stay away?
I said it was a personal decision, and like I said, today I was back out here full of energy. It was great to be back out here with the guys.
Personal football decision?
It's a personal decision from football, off the field, everything. Like I said, I made that decision because of me.
Okay, with that, we welcome in Trevor Maddich, ESPN College Football Analyst, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters, Trevor, your reaction to Jeffrey Simmons missing OTAs and his explanation.
All right, well, there's a couple things to unpack here, Jared. One is that his explanation was horrific. He had to know that he was going to be asked about missing OTAs at a time when Coach Callahan is kind of resetting the entire competitive nature and team nature of this organization. And he needed to be there if he wanted to be a leader, for goodness sake. And so the fact that he wasn't really ready to answer the question, other than saying that it was a personal decision, was a bad look on his part, because it opened the door for critics to really rain on it. As far as should he have been there, yeah, I believe he should have been there. If it were me, I would have been there. He didn't have to be there, but this is a time when you've got the number one pick in the draft, quarterback. You're resetting the franchise. You're with the franchise. You signed a big deal with them. You want to win. And even though you don't have to be there, this would have been a good time to be there. But then I've got to ask myself, am I really mad at him for not being there? And no, the answer to that is no. And the reason is that the NFL Players Association has fought long and hard over decades to create a certain kind of work environment. And part of that is limiting full pad practices in training camp so people don't get beat down in training camp by coaches that are too aggressive. Part of that is how many mandatory workouts and practices you can have and what are the nature of those practices in the off season. And I can't bring myself to tell an NFL football player that he should just ignore that. I mean, part of it is that there are certain things you can't do in mandatory minicamps. You know, you can't go too hard, so you're simulating a live scrimmage. You can't wear full pads. You can't wear shoulder pads. These are things that you can't do. But what if the coach wants to do things in a way that helps to win next year because they weren't that good for the last several years? So, you know, we're going to put on shorts and shoulder pads and helmets, even though we're not supposed to, and we're going to get some extra pass protection and extra pass rushing work in because that's how committed we are. Should the coach be able to do that? And the answer is no way should he be able to do that. No way. And in the same way, the coach shouldn't be able to, and he's not, to his credit. I mean, Coach Callahan, as far as I know, is not doing anything to Jeffrey Simmons for not being there, but you also can't say, if you're not required to be here, I can't require you and I can't punish you because you're not here. And there are reasons why it's good for the players sometimes to get away and stay away for a while. And so do I think he should have been there? Yeah, I think he should have gone to the extra effort. Am I mad at him for doing it? No, I'm not mad at all, because that's the nature of NFL football. And he chose to take that time other places, and that was his prerogative.
Yeah, it's hard for me when Simmons, and today he was asked about, you know, why he doesn't get more sacks. Brian Callahan said that, you know, Simmons does a great job. We'd like to see him get more sacks, you know, actual sacks. And Simmons today was talking about how we all need to be on the same page with the pass rush. hard for me to figure out how you get on the same page when everybody else is here and you're not. From a leadership standpoint, do you think this hurts Simmons' reputation inside the locker room when everybody else was here and he was not?
I don't think it hurts his reputation, just because that reputation is going to be set by how well he plays. Anybody that's upset that he's not there, first of all, in the locker room, I don't think anybody would be, because they are the same kind. They're in the same kind of situation from a standpoint of the business side of the NFL. That's why whenever a teammate would hold out in training camp because of a contract situation, nobody ever gets mad at them, unless they're being completely unreasonable and ridiculous, because everybody knows that they might be the next player holding out in training camp when it's time for them to take care of business from a contract standpoint. So in the locker room, I think what he did was not lose anything with his teammates. That's just my opinion. I haven't talked to anybody about it. But I think what he did was missed an opportunity to go out there and create a leadership role. Because, you know, we talk a lot, well, I think a lot of critics, let's put it that way, talk a lot about what Jeffrey Simmons is not. And a lot of people are saying that he's not a leader, and they'll tell you this is a reason why, that's a reason why, and the other's a reason why. He's not a leader. And my thought there is, well, okay, what if he's not? Let's talk about what he is. And what he is probably the best defensive football player on this team. And he is a guy that can help them on the field. And so if he's a leader, better. If he's not a leader, I don't want him to strut around acting like a leader, because that would be just a ridiculous distraction. Because guys know who the leaders are, and they know who the leaders are not. And the guys who are not the leaders and step up and get in your face and try to act like a leader, that's a distraction. It's not motivating in any way. It's kind of ridiculous. So, you know, Simmons, okay, I will stipulate that he's done some things and not done some things that would have put him in a leadership position. Yes, if he would have shown up for voluntary OTAs and things like that, it would have helped him to reestablish that. But ultimately, what his teammates are going to care about from him is, how does he play when it's time to throw down when the regular season starts? And, you know, he has committed. He's talked to the coach, and they've committed to trying to get him more actual sacks, not just affecting the quarterback and not just pressures, but turn those into getting the quarterback on the ground. And I get that. That's a priority for them. Okay. But I think that's how he'll be judged by his teammates, not whether or not, you know, they want to get behind him and charge up San Juan Hill.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Cam Ward's stat line today. I mean, I was not overly impressed, but I also didn't think he did anything all that bad. He threw an interception in 7-on-7, which was a ball he shouldn't have thrown, but it's fine. And I thought his performance, he had a great throw to Gunnar Helm over the middle. Doesn't really throw much outside the numbers. Lightning quick release. But apparently he was 20 of 21 today. Titan fans are going to get excited about that. He did have the one turnover that was intercepted in 7-on-7. In these passing camps, how can we really evaluate Cam Ward, Trevor?
It's hard. I mean, you and I have talked at length that in a practice situation, you can tell if a guy cannot play, usually. But you really can't tell if he can play, if he's really good. Because there are guys that will go out and light up practice and can't do it in the game. But there are guys that, you know, that are awful in practice. And if you're awful in practice, chances are pretty good you're not going to do well in the game. There are guys that are average in practice, and then they really turn the light on when it comes to game time. And, you know, I get that. But you still aren't going to be terrible in practice and good in the game. That's never going to happen. So you can tell if a guy's bad. You can't really tell if he's going to be good. And so from a standpoint of Cam Ward, I think fans should get excited about it. Why not, man? They're fans. They're looking at every nugget you can get, and there's not a whole lot of nuggets that are available. You know, and I saw he was 20 of 21 in practice. That's great. But, I mean, you were there, Jared, and you've talked about how a lot of those were kind of easy throws, and they didn't hit all the portions of the field, not out to the sideline, not the 20-yard, you know, throw to the sideline, not a deep throw over the top, and just mix everything in that he would need to mix in a game situation. So he completed a lot of passes, and I think that's great. It's a good start. He's got to be in first year before he can get to second year. But I think what he needs to show at this time is that he is getting a greater understanding of what he needs to do from a standpoint of running the offense as each practice goes on. And so what I want to see from him is not necessarily making amazing throws and looking like he's, you know, Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. What I want to see from him is knowing where to throw the ball and then getting it out on time to that spot based on what the defense is. Now, if he's accurate, good. I mean, he's got the ability to be very accurate. Right now, you know, whether he throws an interception or whether he throws a completion is mildly interesting to me. I want the mental side. I want to see him recognize the pre-snap look. I want to see him drop back at the snap and recognize the actual coverage, because very often it's going to be a disguised pre-snap. And then I want to see him know where to go with the ball and go there. And if that's not there, I want to see him go to the correct second option, then the correct third option. Now, there's a lot of footwork and technique to go along with that. But right now, I'm not so much worried about his footwork and technique as I am in him knowing where to go with the ball. Because if he has perfect footwork and technique and doesn't know where to go with the ball, he's going to get smashed. And he's going to throw lots of interceptions in games and have all kinds of problems. But if he knows where to go with the ball, everything else is going to fall in place. So those are the things that I'm looking at now. And if the coach has given him a lot of easy reads to start with, I'm okay with that, because, you know, you got, when you're parked, you got to put it in first gear and then get moving. And then you roll up the gears until you get into 10th gear at 120 miles an hour on the freeway, assuming that you're in Germany on the Autobahn. Because that's illegal around here. So anyway, so those are the things that I would be looking at when it comes to Cam Ward. And if I'm a fan, I'm very excited that he was 20 of 21. I'm very excited that he was 14 of 14, according to reports in team period. Fantastic. But if I'm the coach, I'm only interested in those completions if they went to the right receiver at the right timing.
Mm-hmm. Trevor Maddich with us. Last one on the Titans, Trev. The Midday Show played a game today where they were asked who would they start their franchise with other than Cam Ward, other than the quarterback, which player on the Titans would they start their franchise with if they could take any player who's not a quarterback? Who would you pick as kind of the first guy, your pick of the litter, to start a franchise that's not a quarterback with on this roster?
Jared, I heard you talking about that earlier in the show. And, man, I had the same reaction you did. This should be easy. We should be able to say, oh, yeah, I'm torn between these four guys, right? With the Titans, you're trying to do a process of elimination by who you dislike the least for starting a new franchise around that guy. And the guy I would dislike the least, I think, would be J.C. Latham. You know, I think he's going to be an outstanding right tackle. I think he's got leadership qualities that he developed at Alabama. I think there's a lot of great things about him. But, you know, there should be skill guys that I would want. There should be a Ja'Marr Chase kind of guy, a receiver, you know, or a running back, a Saquon Barkley, that I would say, yeah, I want that guy because he's an incredible electric playmaker. And the Titans haven't had a guy that has been that guy. Certainly, hopefully, somebody will materialize in the season. But right now, we don't know who that's going to be. On the defensive side of the ball, no. There's nobody that stands out from the standpoint of, I would take that guy to build an expansion franchise around, because that guy on the Titans defense, I think, is absolutely fantastic. You know, that guy's not on the team right now, or at least he hasn't revealed himself to be that guy. And so it's really that I was kind of excited for improvement on the Titans this year, and I still think they're going to improve for a variety of reasons, because it's things that they've done in the offseason. But my Jets have been cooled remarkably after listening to you try to work your way through the Titans roster and find someone that's a no-brainer that you would choose in this scenario.
Trevor Maddich with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. The house settlement is now official. Trevor reacts next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Paul, when you first heard this ruling, you first heard this story, and it was set in stone and made news, what was your initial thought?
Jay, I couldn't help but think back about 10 years ago when Mark Emmert, then the president of the NCAA, essentially said college athletes will be paid over my dead body. He's still alive, but the NCAA is dead. It may still be in existence. We're still having tournaments such as the Women's World Series and the men's baseball. But the NCAA, as we know it, is gone. They literally have no jurisdiction whatsoever other than to be tournament directors. And this was supposed to level the playing field. Everybody pays the same into the kitty and then divvies it up. But it will do anything but. The big will get bigger, and the small schools will simply slip away, other than maybe in basketball-only conferences. They can use all that money for basketball as opposed to like at Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State, where they have to split up $20.5 million.
About the new house settlement that just came down the pipe. Trevor Maddich with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, I want to ask you this question, which is the big kind of if here is, if the house settlement stands and if everybody plays by the rules, that means that the athletic departments will be capped at $20.5 million to spend on players and everybody will be the same. But do you really believe that everybody's going to play by the rules as far as the house settlement is concerned? What do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, there's still so much that's unknown. I mean, you talk about that $20-plus million that each team can now spend on athletes, and that includes other sports, not just football, although football will get the lion's share of it. We'll see what happens with lawsuits relative to Title IX if that comes up, in terms of, if other athletes and women especially think that they're not getting their fair share based on Title IX of that $20.5 million. But the thing is, first of all, the power conferences, certainly in the SEC and Big Ten, will be able to afford that. They'll be able to afford to add another $20 million to their athletic budget. Most of them will be able to. The ACC and the Big 12, they're going to struggle more to add another $20 million to be able to pay players, because right now that money is being allocated to other places. They've got to take that now and then put it towards the athletes themselves if they want to do the entire amount. It's not a mandatory spend. It sure is the max that they can spend. Then you get into the group of five and all the rest of them, and there's no way in the world they're going to be able to do that. And so, you know, it's going to continue to push the best high school players and the best transfer portal recruits to the richest schools, because those are the ones that will be able to spend the entire amount. So we start there. But another thing is that, you know, there are provisions that we know about now in this final settlement that I think are immediately going to be litigated. I mean, immediately. So even though we know that, you know, these are the outlines of the House settlement, you know, I think there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be a problem. One of them is there's a clearinghouse now, mm-hmm, that will go over every single NIL contract, which is name, image, and likeness, which is the money that not the school pays the player directly, but that outside businesses will pay the player for their name, image, and likeness. So the car dealership will pay the quarterback to come and sign autographs on Saturday afternoon in the off season, and that's their name, image, and likeness, and that's where all the money has been coming from when you're hearing about all these big NIL contracts for all these players. That's in addition to the direct payment and that $20.5 million in the house settlement. But here's the problem. That clearinghouse is going to go over all these contracts, and they'll decide whether or not a given NIL contract is actually a legitimate business purpose, or if it's just pay for play and therefore it's not legitimate. Well, based on what? What if that car dealership is owned by a billionaire and he says, yeah, I'm going to pay the quarterback $5 million to come sign autographs on a Saturday afternoon one time in the off season, and the clearinghouse says, nope, that's not legitimate. Well, they're going to get sued, because, mm-hmm, you know, who's to say how much money any business relationship is worth when you're talking about somebody's name, image, and likeness? That's putting a value on a painting, right? Externally, the painting is worth what someone will pay for it. So things like that, I think, are still going to be litigated, and there'll be a lot of lawsuits, and this thing isn't over yet.
So the thing that gets me is that I just don't feel like it's even constitutional to say if Joey's tire rack wants to give Johnny Joe $100,000. I mean, I don't think that it's the NCAA's business as to Johnny Joe getting that $100,000. And I do not understand how that is constitutional, Trevor.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's one reason that you know, the, you know, college football kind of as a body is pushing for Congress to pass a law that will make some of these limitations. But even that might be found to be unconstitutional in the courts because, again, we go to the, you know, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NFL right now, which is what college football is kind of moving towards in terms of their model. And the NFL is allowed to put restrictions on players in terms of what, you know, in terms of the salary cap numbers and free agency rules and franchise tags and all kinds of things like that, that would be considered collusion if the 32 team owners got together and said, okay, guys, we're going to have a system where you can put a franchise tag on your best player if he's a free agent, and he can't go anywhere unless other teams give up an exorbitant amount of draft capital so that we can keep our best players on our teams. Well, if they did that, absent a collective bargaining agreement, it would be thrown out in the courts as an illegal restraint of trade. But because of the collective bargaining agreement, the players, represented by a union, agree to that. And so they agree to that because they get other considerations that, that are good for them. And so this is what's going to happen in college. You know, even if Congress comes up and puts limitations on the movement of players and how much players can make and what the terms of an NIL contract need to be or else it's not going to be accepted by the clearinghouse that's now being created, it'll be thrown out. And so we're nowhere near the end of defining the edges of the envelope of the free-for-all, the wild, wild west that paying college football players has become in the last 5 years or so, and really absent a collective bargaining agreement, which you cannot have through all of college football. It's impossible because there's different amounts of money and commitment and everything else. I think what you're going to have, and this to me is one of the reasons that the Big Ten and the SEC are going to continue to kind of move ahead of everybody else, because they've got more money than everybody else. And while the SEC is not going to enter a collective bargaining agreement that includes the MAC, which is Northern Illinois and Kent State and Miami of Ohio, you know, they're not going to end up with a collective bargaining agreement where those two conferences have the same stipulations in the agreement, because you just can't do that. The SEC makes too much money and the MAC makes too little money to compete in that realm. So I think you're going to end up with the Big Ten and the SEC having collective bargaining agreements within their conferences that players will be able to sign that won't be relevant to other teams. And I think that's one of the reasons why right now in college football, we've got, you know, Division 1A, which is now called the FBS, 1AA, which is now called the FCS. Then you've got Division 2, Division 3, and all that. There's going to be another division. It's because money and the need for a collective bargaining agreement to settle down the wild, wild west of paying players is going to force that.
Trevor, Caroline Fenton, I think, is a very smart person. You know the respect that I have for her, and I know the respect that you have for her. She is the only person who is not paid directly by Tony Petitti who is in favor of the 4-4-2 college football playoff model. The SEC, led by Greg Sankey, is against it. The ACC and the Big 12 are against it. Notre Dame is against it. The Big Ten wants it and wants it desperately. And I ask you this question simply because I want to know. Rick Neuheisel told me over the weekend it's going to be 4-4-2-2. Now, again, he went to UCLA, Big Ten. He's on CBS, Big Ten. Do you really think we're headed to the 4-4-2-2? And if we are, who's flipping between the SEC, Notre Dame, the ACC, and the Big 12 to get us to 4-4-2-2?
You know, I think the SEC might, but the thing of it is, you know, that 4-4, which means four automatic bids to the 16-team playoff for both the SEC and the Big 10, the SEC not demanding that is really interesting. People say that they're just looking out for themselves, but I think they think that's better for everybody. But from a standpoint of the Big Ten wanting four guaranteed berths, I would suggest that it's not as selfish a thing as you would think. Because there are, what, 18 teams in the Big Ten. And you might have the fourth team in the Big Ten have three losses. If they schedule a quality non-conference schedule, like Ohio State's playing Texas this year early in the season. I mean, that last year Ohio State didn't play a single team from the Power Four in their non-conference schedule. This year they're playing Texas, right? And so if you want to see that, you may find that the fourth best team in the Big Ten, because you know they end up with three losses, maybe four, but still might be one of the 10 or 12 best teams in the country. It's just that when you've got Oregon and Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan and Iowa and Washington and USC and other teams that are facing off against each other, you're going to lose some games. And I think what they're saying is that we don't want to put our teams in a position to have to schedule the worst teams possible in non-conference play. And we're having to play nine conference games and the SEC is only playing eight, and put our fourth team, fourth best team out of the ability to be in the, playoff, because they're a great team. They deserve to be in the playoff from a standpoint of the quality of the team, but they faced a terribly hard schedule. And I think they're saying that we want to protect that fourth team for that reason. And so that to me makes some sense. And I'm not really mad at the Big Ten or the SEC if they decide to do that for wanting that fourth, because besides the SEC and the Big Ten, nobody faces the kind of conference schedule that those two conferences face.
Trevor Matisch, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep. Coming up next, it's a side some Titan fans have been on for a while. I have not been. But after today, I think I am crossing the picket line. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.